Blog Talk Radio.
Radio, and I'm your host, Terry Littlejohn. And the song you just heard at the top of the show is a song that I use quite often because it was created by the late Xavier Burns, who passed away in December. He gave me that song when I first started my show, and he created that song and he recorded it himself, and we call it So Real because my show is called Truth Heals. And he was a very talented self-taught musician out of Oakland, California. And he was a very humbled guy. And he took sick a couple of years ago, and he suffered through his illnesses, but he believed and he understood. And he was very brave when it came to him meeting his death. And he said he was ready to go and be with his Savior. So that's a shout-out to the Burns family and to Gina Burns and her son, Xavier Jr., wishing them all the peace and comfort that they need in these times of their loss of their loved one, Xavier Burns. Now, this show is a real tough one for me. I'm not certain if I can truly get to the truth of what the Iowa caucus is. I've been doing my research, trying to really figure it out as far as why it exists. You know, the question is, here that we ask is, what is it, why is it so important, and who are the participants? Well, I'm going to do the best I can to answer those questions and hope that I give you the best truth that I know. Well, it says the Iowa caucus is an electoral event in which residents of the U.S. state of Iowa meet in precinct caucuses in all of Iowa's 1,681 precincts and elect delegates to the corresponding county conventions. There are 99 counties in Iowa, and thus there are 99 conventions. It is noteworthy for the amount of media attention it receives during the U.S. presidential election years. Since 1972, the Iowa caucuses have been the first major electoral event of the nominating process for the President of the United States. Now, you guys know what the electorals are. The electorals are actually the people who are voted upon in every state. And once you cast your vote, your independent self-vote for the president or for the nominees, the electorals go and supposedly cast their votes according to the majority of the votes that we have cast. So this is something where people go, and they have a couple of hours within that day, which is coming up on February 1st of this year. They have a couple of hours to go and cast their electoral vote. And whatever the results are, that is supposed to be who the nominees are for the parties. Although only about 1% of the nation's delegates are chosen by the Iowa State Convention, 25 Republican delegates in 2012 assigned proportionally. The Iowa caucuses have served as an early indication of which candidate for president might win the nomination of their political party. And that party's national convention, which ones could drop out owing to lack of support. So they keep saying that the Iowa caucus, it knows how to predict its winners of the actual election for the president. And people tend to give their parties the support once they are elected from these caucuses. It's really, when you think about it, it doesn't really make any sense how this works. But it's been going on for quite some time and seems to be working well. But I'm still not understanding it, you know. It says that the recent changes to the Republican parties of Iowa's bylaws now make the caucus results binding on Iowa's delegates to the National Convention. So see, the Democrats hold their caucus and the Republicans hold their caucus. They each hold their own set of caucuses subject to their own particular rules that change from time to time. Party must be registered with that party. Participants can change their registration at the caucus location. Additionally, 17-year-olds can participate as long as they will be 18 years old by the date of the general election. It says that observers are allowed to attend this caucus as long as they do not become actively involved in the debate and voting process. So I guess they can sit there and be a part of the onlookers, like the media and the campaign staff and the volunteers. They can attend these caucuses. So it's a really big to-do thing that they do before the major election comes. And this is where we get our votes to say who's going to be on the primary ticket. So still they don't tell us, why do we have to have this? You know, where did it come from, and who's to say that this is really what we're supposed to do as far as a country that practices its democracies? Now, the Democrat Party uses a process that is more complex than the Republican Party. Each precinct divides its delegate seats among the candidates in proportion to the caucus goers' votes. Participants indicate their support for a particular candidate by standing in a designated area of the caucus site, forming a preference group. An area may also be designated for undecided participants. Then, for roughly 30 minutes, participants try to convince their neighbors to support their candidates. Wow, this is interesting. Each preference group might informally deputize a few members to recruit supporters from the other groups, and, in particular, from among those undecided. Undecided participants might visit each preference group to ask its members about their candidate. Then after 30 minutes, the electionarian is temporarily halted and the supporters for each candidate are counted. At this point, the caucus officials determine which candidates are viable. Depending on the number of county delegates to be elected, the viability threshold is 15% of attendees. For a candidate to receive any delegates from a particular precinct, he or she must have the support of at least the percentage of participants required by the viability threshold. This is really interesting. And if you've ever watched it on television, you'll see the people standing there. You'll understand what I'm talking about. Now, once the viability is determined, participants have roughly another 30 minutes to realign. The supporters of invaluable candidates may find a viable candidate to support. Join together with supporters of another inviolable candidate to secure a delegate for one of the two, or choose to abstain. This realignment is a crucial distinction of the caucuses in that, unlike a primary, being a voter's second candidate of choice can help a candidate. So if you understand that, please help me understand this, because this is really a very complex situation. When the voting is closed, a final head count is conducted, and each precinct apportions delegates to the county convention. These numbers are reported to the state party, which counts the total number of delegates for each candidate and reports the results to the media. Most of the participants go home, leaving a few to finish the business of the caucus. Each preference group elects its delegate, and then the group reconvenes to elect local party officers and discuss the platform. So this is how they come up with the person that's going to be put on their ticket. And over the years, these are the percentages that they've had for their parties. Like, for instance, in 1972, the caucus was held on January 24th. There was 36% that were uncommitted. 36% voted for Edmund Muskie. 23% voted for George McGovern. 2% voted for Herbert Humphrey. 1% voted for Eugene McCarthy. 1% voted for Shirley Chisholm. And 1% voted for Henry McJackson. This is the way it works. Another one, for instance, in 1976, Jimmy Carter got 28%. And then in 1980, Jimmy Carter got 59% versus Ted Kennedy, 31%. Then when we move forward, you can see in 1984, Walter Mondale got 49%, where Jesse Jackson got 2%. Then we fast forward to the year where in 2008, on January 3rd, Barack Obama got 38% to Hillary Clinton's 29%. So you can clearly see why he was put as a Democrat party who ran for the president in 2008. And then once again in 2012, President Barack Obama got 98% and 2% were uncommitted. So that's how the Democrats control their caucus. Now the Republicans, theirs is a little different in which the way they process their caucus. For the Republicans, the Iowa caucus previously followed and should not be confused with the Iowa straw poll in August of the preceding year. Out of the 6 straw poll interactions, the winner of the straw poll failed to win the Iowa caucus 3 times in 1987, 2007, and 2011. In June 2015, the party announced that the straw poll would no longer take place. The process of selecting Iowa delegates to the Republican National Convention prior to the 2016 election cycle started with selection of delegates to the county conventions, which in turn affected the delegates elected to district conventions, who also served as delegates to the state convention, where delegates were chosen for the national convention. This process rewarded candidate organizers who not only got supporters to the caucus sites, but also got supporters willing to serve as delegates to county conventions and willing to vote for other delegates who supported a specific candidate. So in 2012, this process resulted in Ron Paul, if you remember that, supporters dominating the Iowa delegation to the Republican National Convention, having 22 of the 28 Iowa delegates, with Mitt Romney getting the other 6 delegates. Because the delegates elected at the caucus did not need to declare a candidate preference, the media did not have an objective way to determine the success of the individual candidates at the caucuses. We all know that Mitt Romney went on to be the Republican nominee for the 2012 election. The media focused on the secret ballot polling conducted at the caucus sites and have generally referred to this non-binding poll as the caucus. There were irregularities in the 2012 caucus site polling results, including the fact that 8 precincts results went missing and were never counted. 8 precincts out of the thousands of, out of the 99 precincts were missing. Because of the irregularities in the process and the fact that the total reported to the media were unrelated to the delegate selection process, there have been changes in both how the caucus site secret ballots polling is sent to the state party headquarters and in how Iowa delegates to the national convention are required to vote. Interesting how the Republican Party caucus is doing that. Sounds familiar. Sounds like the Patriots, the football team, how they cheat. But that's okay because it finally caught up with them. Just had to plug that real quick. Starting in 2016, the caucus site voting that was previously a non-binding poll becomes the binding method of selecting delegates. So, acting in accordance with a mandate from the Republican National Committee, the delegates are bound to vote for candidates in proportion to the votes cast for each candidate at the caucus site. So, you have the Republican parties that cast their votes. For example, in 1980, George W. Bush Sr. got 32%, Ronald Reagan got 30%. So you see how he became, George Bush Sr. became the nominee and the president of that election year. And then in February of 1984, Ronald Reagan was unopposed. And then in 2000, George W. Bush got 41%, or Steve Forbes got 31%. And then again in 2004, George W. Bush was unopposed. So this is how these caucuses are held. This is how they're ran. But still, we're trying to understand, why do we put so much effort into these caucuses, and why does the media put so much attention on these participants out of one state, out of the 50 states that have electoral voters? But this one state is supposed to be the state that predicts who the next president is going to be. And so they say this is a very important time for the election. So I'm going to take a break real quick, and we're going to try to come back. If you have any questions, or if you could help me understand the truth behind the Iowa caucuses, please give me a call at 347-237-5247. 347-237-5247. I saw my friend Harriet call earlier, but I'm not sure if her phone got disconnected or not. But if you're out there, Harriet, please give me a call at 347-237-5247. I would love to hear your truth about the Iowa caucus. So let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk some more about it. Trying to discuss and figure out the truth behind the Iowa caucus, because that's all we've been hearing lately in the media and the news concerning the politics and the election, the presidential election for 2016. We must first go through the process of the Iowa caucuses. And they talk a lot about this procedure, but they never really sit down and explain to you why it is so important, or how did it come about, and how do we have such a process in this country that we practice democracy. Now, I'm here to try to give you the best truth that I can about this caucus. Now, it says on February 1st, as I said earlier, a few hundred thousand Iowa residents will gather in a couple thousand caucus sites and kickstart the presidential nomination process. So it's been 44 years since the first presidential caucus, and 40 years since both parties held them. And yet for 315 8 million Americans who do not live in Iowa, and for the slightly smaller millions who live in primary not caucus states, the process perpetually needs explaining, just as I said. So let's try once again to explain this caucus. Okay? It says that it starts around 7 p.m. Central Time, and at some point, we will know the winners. For the Republican side, I believe theirs takes a little bit longer for you to know the winner. Now, we want to know, we hear about the primary election. We always hear about, and when we had the primary election in 2008, it was Hillary Clinton versus President Barack Obama. And we all know President Barack Obama won with a landslide. And he also won the caucus. So they always say whoever wins the Iowa caucus will most likely win in the primaries. So, how is this caucus different from a primary? Well, it says that it depends on which party you're asking about, which it still does not clarify exactly how these work. So instead of heading to the precincts, like most people do for the primaries, the Iowa precincts voters, they head to the caucus site that puts a lot of precincts together. And instead of seeing their votes tabulated by the state election office, they will see them reported to the state parties, which will in turn report them to the news media, which makes no sense if you think about our elections and our electors' rights. It says a Republican caucus is odd but simple, where 900 caucus site voters will gather, then hear speeches from whichever campaigns have precinct campaigns assigned to whip up the votes. So then it says that they will write their choices on paper and hand them in. Okay? The Democrat caucus process is more complicated. When they show up at one of the 1,100-odd sites, voters will be asked to gather in sections designated for the candidates. Remember, I was telling you about that earlier. And they stand in these sections. They will be counted. If one candidate fails to get at least 15% of the voters in his corner, they're released, and caucus captains for the surviving candidates can personally lobby and answer questions, enticing them to join up. After that, delegates are assigned based on the support for each candidate. Now, this is very, very confusing. That's why I say you have to watch it and you have to visually see what's going on with this caucus as far as the Democrat caucus is concerned. It's a very strange thing. It's very weird. But this seems to be what they have agreed to is something that's very important and something that matters concerning the primary election. They say, has it mattered in the past? Yes, it has. In 2004, the Democrat presidential campaign of former Vermont Governor Howard Dean was clearly stating to flag before the vote. The final Iowa poll pegged then-Senator and future Secretary of State John F. Kerry at 26%, future tablet covered star John Edwards at 23%, Dean at 20%, and former House Minority Leader Dick Gephardt at 18%. The final result was Kerry's 38%, Edwards 32%, Dean 18%, and Gephardt 11%. Dean was hit three times, first by his falling level of overall support, then by the 15% rule, and finally by the superior acumen of volunteers for the Kerry and Edward campaigns. In real time, they pulled people from Dean to their side. So that's the way it works. And it's kind of like, how can this be? This is America. How can something be so fickle and so indecisive and so, what's the word I'm looking for, so like it can change within a flash. If somebody decides they want to walk over to this side of the room and give their votes to someone else, that's okay. We need to watch to understand, and then we need to figure out why we have this. So the question may be, so does it matter beyond Iowa? Well, let's see. The voter turnout suggests that this is right. In 2012, 121,000 1,501 Iowans voted in the Republican presidential caucus. The Republican primary for Iowa's U.S. Senate race drew out 158,000 total voters. These sorts of contests have usually slanted more toward party activists than late dissenting voters, which is a major reason why Republican elites hope that Iowa can embarrass Trump. So, we're counting on the Iowa caucus to really let us know that Trump is not a presidential candidate. And there's a lot of different reasons out there. People are discussing why he does not want to participate in that debate on Fox News and how he's just doing that just to get media coverage. So I'm not going to talk a lot about him tonight because that's what he wants us to do. So hopefully the caucus will show its importance concerning this candidate named Trump, and hopefully he will not be the winning results of the Iowa caucus. So supporters of the former Texas Congressman Ron Paul took advantage of that and stormed the more obscure county and district party meetings where delegates were actually assigned. This happened in the 2012 caucus. So we're hoping that in this caucus here in 2016 that they will do the same when they get ready to cast their vote for their Republican nominee. But still, we don't know why the Iowa caucus really matters, do we? We still don't know. They still haven't told us. Or is this just something that a few people decided to make very important, and because of that, it continued to be something important, but nobody is brave enough to sit back and say, why is this so important? Really? Why are we spending so much time on this subject matter? And maybe people are just afraid to say, hey, let's do something different for a change. Let's get rid of this process because it really doesn't matter. But who's going to be the first person to stand up and say that? There's too much money being made off of this. There's too much politics involved in this. So they continue. So let's tell you before I leave, let me tell you a short version of what I think this caucus is all about. It says that unless the polls are widely historically cats and dogs living together wrong, these caucuses will end up 2016 campaigns of the past two Republican caucus winners. If Trump wins them, he will have dramatically changed the math of Iowa politics, despite a ground game that has already been exposed as rickety. If Senator Ted Cruz wins, then the Iowa Republicans will have gone on record supporting the candidate who pledged to end the ethanol mandate, a key issue in a corn-growing state. If Senator Marco Rubio of Florida wins, then he could, as Kerry once did with the Democrats, quickly establish himself as a GOP establishment choice. And if Bernie Sanders wins them, along with the following primary in New Hampshire, he will tee up a Democrat Party contest with Hillary Clinton that seemed unthinkable just 2 months ago. So there's the truth that I know it to be. I brought it to you the best way I could, and as I say every week, John 8:32, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. So until next week, stay true and be blessed, and sorry about this show because it still does not answer the question as to what it is, why it is so important, and who are the participants in the Iowa caucus. But until next time, I'm Terry Littlejohn. Thank you and good night.